Hello, this is Sheila Bender, and you are listening to In Conversation, Discussions on Writing and the Writing Life. Today we have with us Casey Cronkite, a part-time now resident of Port Townsend and part-time resident of Oklahoma. From 1994 to 2001, Casey sailed more than 60,000 miles as hired crew on boats in oceans around the world, earned a captain's license, conducted research, wrote articles, and taught all aspects of ocean passage making. In 2001, after completing a world circumnavigation, she attended the Port Townsend Wooden Boat Festival. On September 11th, the day she was heading back out to sea, planes crashed into the World Trade Center. Like others around the world, the incident altered the course of her life. She stayed in Port Townsend and a few months later was asked to take the helm of the festival. For a decade, she served as director of the event in addition to executive roles with Wooden Boat Foundation and Northwest Maritime Center. Pox entered her life in 2007 when she broke a promise not to buy a wooden boat. It is the double-ender wooden sailboat made in Denmark in 1926 that she writes about in her book, Finding Pox, The Unexpected Journey of a Little Wooden Boat. Welcome to the program, Casey.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I'm glad that you're here, sort of. I know that you're speaking to us from Oklahoma. And that is one of my questions. How did Oklahoma come into your life when you seem to be such a water person?
It is something that my middle America friends and farming, ranching family wonder about. But I grew up in Oklahoma. I was born on a cattle ranch here where I was fourth generation in the house and fifth generation in the state. Prior to that, they came here by prairie schooner. And way back earlier than that, of course, across the Atlantic from Netherlands and England and various places in Europe. So I think there were sailors. My first ancestor, Cronkite ancestor in the U.S., was a Dutch shipbuilder in New York, in what became New York. I grew up in Oklahoma, left when I was 18 to go to college and travel, and in 2009, a house became available in the park, a state park that my grandfather helped to start. House prices were quite cheap. I bought a house as sort of an investment and thinking, oh, it would give me a chance to be close to my mom and some nieces and nephew and two of my siblings part-time, and it's now become my writing retreat.
Ah, even as we speak, you're working on a new book?
Yes, I am. In fact, there are parts of it that are laid out on the table in front of me here.
That's good. Well, maybe we'll get back to that. I want to talk about the other question that your bio brought to my mind is, what sort of promise did you make and why that you wouldn't buy a wooden boat? And what about Pox, a wooden boat, made you break that promise?
As I have told people, I worked on boats, other people's boats, for 8 years. I knew the responsibility. I knew the costs. I knew how much work they were. And most of my life, from the time I was 18, my father had died when I was 16. And I guess in some way, mortality sort of reared its head, and I realized life was short, and I was intent on not burdening myself with anything that would require me, that would lock me down, that would fence me in, whether it be a mortgage or a marriage or a boat. And so it wasn't just boats and wooden boats that I wasn't doing. I just wasn't making commitments to anything that was going to limit my ability to travel or to see a chance and take it. So when the email arrived, which is how the book Finding Pox opens, a boat had run away in the marina at Point Hudson, and I could see it outside my window at the cupola house where my office was at that point. I'd been running the Wooden Boat Festival, and I'd heard stories that were familiar, but they were other people's boats and their labor and their love and time that it was taking for these boats. And so I thought for sure I wouldn't ever have the money and I don't have the skills. I'm not a boat builder. So I thought I wouldn't have a wooden boat, nor would I need to as the director, because I had so many beautiful boats in front of me every day and friends who would gladly welcome me aboard. But she popped in an email, and those curves and the beauty of the boat and everything just changed. It was like love at first sight.
Was she the runaway boat that you saw?
No, she wasn't. It was a fiberglass boat that was out in the marina. What happens in chapter one is I walk back down the dock saying, thank God I don't own a boat, and pretty much walked back in, sat down, clicked my email, and boom, in came the beautiful photographs of Pax. She was up in Victoria, British Columbia at that time.
So something about that runaway boat might have told you that even a boat wasn't going to keep you fenced in.
No.
So, and as it turned out, that particular boat brought a lot of journeying for you. So you say Pax, and I said Pax. So maybe you could fill us in on the name of the boat.
The name is Latin for peace. And my friends who are more proper than I am, or maybe don't have a little bit of an Okie accent, say Pax. But it always sounds like a pox on you or something to me. So I say Pax. But people who recognize the Latin will pronounce it more properly, I suppose.
So this boat came to you with history, and then you learned much more about it and at some point decided to write the book. So talking as a writer, I'm wondering if you knew as you were journeying with the boat, which I'll now call Pax 2, did you know you would write this?
I've wanted to write a book since I can remember. I grew up, from the time I was 2, 3, 4, 5, I loved to write stories. And I talked teacher after teacher after teacher in elementary school into letting me write stories for extra credit. So I've always loved writing, and while I didn't study that in college, other things sort of drew my attention, you know, things that you would make money doing or things that some counselor or therapist or whoever would direct me towards. And I say therapist in the way counselors are in colleges where, they're, you know, they're testing you and saying, oh, do you have an aptitude for this or that? So I went off other directions, but I always wanted to write a book, and so when I got Pax, there were stories around her. There was a story of a fire that had destroyed all her history, and so there was a lot of question about where she'd been and who she was, and had she been built in Denmark or Sweden or Norway, and when? And one of the parts of one of those stories was that a woman had stolen the boat in Sausalito and taken her to Canada. And every time people would tell that story, I would feel this ping, you know, in my heart, kind of, because it just tainted her history, and I wondered if it was true, and nobody knew for sure, but it was just how rumors get going. And so after the turmoil of the first haul-out, which was quite an ordeal there in Port Townsend, and as she went back in the water and I was making sure she didn't sink, I was laying on the boat, and she was empty at that point, not only no history, but her interior was gone, and a lot of things were new, had been rebuilt, and didn't look like original older boats that were close to what people thought. I just decided to find her history, to find her story. And at that point, it was really just for myself and for her, for the boat to have a history that I knew. And it would be helpful to me if I was to sell the boat someday, and also just so that I could stop these rumors. About 2 years into it, around 2011, my job changed. They wanted to change my position at the Northwest Maritime Center, and I decided that that position wasn't one for me, and so we parted ways, and I literally had about an hour's notice. I drove home, and I walked into the house and told my partner, I think I just lost my job. And she looked at me, and she said, well, you've always wanted to write a book. Maybe this is the time you can do it. And I just decided I was going to turn 50, I think, the next day. And so these three things sort of coincided, and I just decided to turn the research project for myself into the research project for a book.
I like it. I like your partner's words, because life does open up opportunities, but sometimes we don't see them. The people around us have to encourage us to see them.
Yes.
And so how long did you work on the book?
I bought the boat in 2007, and I started really researching in 2009. So I had some things that were stories about the boat, and like I'd written an article for Windboat Magazine out of that, but just magazine articles was all I was thinking. And so October 2011 is when I really started work on the book, and then it was published 5 years later.
Is it possible for you to read just a small excerpt from the book?
I can. I've got two things that I thought of. Just as a preview to this, people should know that the boat was built in Denmark in 1936 and spent time in California and also British Columbia. So I went to Denmark. By the time I finished this book, I had been to Denmark 4 times, California 5 times, and Victoria and Vancouver Island 2 times, tracking down the history and meeting the owners and people who knew about the boat. This excerpt that I want to read is about 2 years into the research, when I went down to California. And when I do presentations in person, I try to read one little excerpt from each of the 3 countries. So this one takes place in Los Angeles. I can tell you that trips to Denmark started with me being like the romantic American looking for my roots, then proceeded to the second time I went, I had more information and had some very concrete details at that point. And people were surprised that I was back, shaking their heads, she's back. And the third time I went back, they made time for their entire family to meet me because what I was bringing changed some of their whole family's history. October 2012. At 10 o'clock in the morning, after surviving the bumper-to-bumper semi-truck traffic from Long Beach to the access road of the 7,500-acre port of Los Angeles, I parked in the tepid shade of a lone and straggly palm tree across from the colonial yacht anchorage. There was not a soul in sight. Through the chain-link fence in front of my car, dozens of oil pump jacks rocked continuously and trash blew like tumbleweeds. The place was not hospitable to humans, especially from northern climates. The contrast for packs from latitude 55 degrees north to 34 and from short summers to year-round sun would have been extreme. Los Angeles would be hell for a wooden boat. The gates to the CYA dock and boatyards were locked, so I went to the office. The only person in sight, a young woman, was on the phone. On the wall were framed newspaper articles about the founder, Augie Camello, an Italian refugee of World War II and his latest self-built boat, Apple Pie. At the height of business, 2,500 boats a year had come through his yard. I didn't come here to look for gold, he said. I came to make a better life for my family. Their story was pure American dream. Two sons and a daughter were continuing the business. By the nameplate on her desk, the woman on the phone was a third generation. I listened as she explained to the caller that the port had just given formal eviction notice. All boats must be moved in a month. The person on the other end of the line was clearly upset. Two more people came into the office. Both held letters in their hands. The situation was going from bad to worse. Panic and anger filled the room. While she commiserated with the next person, I decided to write a note describing a few questions about PAX and offered to come back the next day. Cupping her hand over the phone, she assured me she would talk to her Aunt Maria, who was the business manager. If anyone can help you, it'll be her, she said. I'll give her the message. Please, look around the yard. The boatyard and docks were just shy of decrepit and almost empty. The few people in sight were caught up in heated discussions. I walked around the small boatyard, imagining what it had been like for PAX in the 1970s. A small fishing boat about her size, called Good Times, was sitting on blocks by the Marine Railway. Nearby was a 3-by-5-foot mirror, probably used by the lift operators. Reflected in it was a forest of terminal island cranes and miles of stacked shipping containers. In the 60 years since CYA opened, this port had become the busiest in North America. For the Camello family and small boaters here, good times had come and gone.
You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM, Port Townsend. In case you just joined us, you are listening to In Conversation with Sheila Bender, discussions on writing and the writing life. Today, Sheila is talking with Port Townsend resident and former Wooden Boat Festival director Casey Cronkite about the writing of her book, Finding PAX.
Casey, thank you. You have us all curious to know about how, and you don't have to tell us because we'll want to get your book, how what you found out did change the history of, or the known history of those families in Denmark. And so I want to repeat the title, Finding PAX, The Unexpected Journey of a Little Wooden Boat. And people can either type that title into their browser or your name, Casey, K-A-C-I, Cronkite. Spell your last name for us.
C-R-O-N-K-H-I-T-E. And if you spell it like Walter, it'll come to me, too. I have both URLs.
Okay, that was smart. Thank you.
Yeah.
Is PAX still in your life?
She is on the AB dock in Boat Haven Marina, slip 120.
All right.
That's why I spend the summer. I mean, I'm coming back there soon and to sail and spend time on board her this summer. I love riding on board. So, yeah, I look forward to it.
That's great. So what about your new book project? Is it also about sailing?
It is. It's the prequel to this book.
Which means that it's before you knew that you would get a wooden boat.
Of course, there's a lot of question and a lot of adventure in my life before. It had to do with the ocean sailing, and so this book, the working title is When a Cowgirl Goes to Sea, and it's the story of how I got from the ranch in Oklahoma to start sailing and then to sail around the world. And what's of particular interest to me and very important to me is that the first time I ever went sailing was in Port Townsend. I was working in Anchorage, Alaska, and I flew down to go sailing for the first time. And I literally got on board a boat that was not far off of the same location where PAX is now, all these years later. But that sparked an interest that I could no longer deny. And I wanted to be out in the wind and out in the open spaces and the ocean. And that led from one sailing experience to another, to eventually working with Nancy Early to sail around the world. And we landed, ended that circumnavigation in Port Townsend in 2001.
So your genes definitely have seafaring in them, as you've described to us.
And I'm fortunate I'm not seasick. From the moment I put my foot on board a boat, it felt like a horse. And, I mean, I had never stepped on board a boat, but I put my foot on it. It rocked towards me. I put my leg over the lifeline. It rocked back to the center. And we left to go out sailing. The wind was in my hair. Something broke, and I knew how to fix it, which is good. That's a farm skill that comes in handy on boats. And I didn't get seasick. And like I said, it took me back. It was as if I had done it all my life.
Well, your working title sounds like a good title. Can you repeat it for us?
When a Cowgirl Goes to Sea.
Yeah, you've just explained a whole bunch about that title. I like it. So how do you feel as a person who likes the wind through your hair and the rocking of the boat or the horse sitting and writing? How do you do this?
Well, thankfully, so much of writing is emotional for me and is imaginative, so I can be anywhere. I do like to write with a vista. Where I am in Oklahoma is up on the third floor, and it looks towards the canyons, towards the north and east. In Port Townsend, my view is over towards Mount Baker and up towards the San Juan Islands, and so there's a vista. But I don't need much. I certainly don't need a big house, but I do like to have something where my eyes can have that connection to the journey, to horizon and to motion, and then it's in me. But other than that, the writing, sitting life has been tough, and I have definitely had to make more and more effort to exercise. I love walking, and so I do a lot of walking. I try to walk at least a half hour, if not for a couple of hours, in parks or even walking from my house to the boat when I'm there in Port Townsend.
Well, an early teacher of mine said that moving your body to some rhythm, for him it was basketball, is really important to writing. It helps us access that part of ourselves. Do you find that?
I do. I absolutely do. And sometimes it's sort of rocking. I will change position a lot because I have a couple of stories. I will run. I'll go run it up and down the stairs. But walking, the rhythm of walking is especially good for me to process. I feel it's almost as valuable as dream time for me.
What else would you like to tell us about your writing life and your goals?
I had a wonderful editor that I worked with on this book. I was trying for a long time to go it alone, partly because I felt, not having done an MFA or studied English literature or gone to many writing workshops, although I did do a few in the process of this, I felt alone. I felt incapable of doing it, but I wanted to try. And I also knew deeply that the story was in me to write, so it wasn't like I felt that I didn't want to be the writer of the story. I knew I wanted to be the writer. I just wasn't sure how to structure a book and how to do it. Silly me, I thought it was going to be something as easy as just stringing together, 25 magazine articles. And instead, it was the hardest thing I've ever done. It was much more art than I ever imagined. I think I did a word count of the folders. I had 400,000 words to get to 40.
Wow.
In the finished book. And some of those are chapters that will roll into When a Cowgirl Goes to Sea, because that was one of the things that happened in the process, was narrowing the scope of that story. But I'd say my editor, there were some things that she said and did that definitely helped me clarify what this book was about and what my job was
as a writer. Let me ask you a question. Was this an editor that came into your life after your book was accepted for publication?
No, I self-published the book. I have been approached by a major publisher, and I was hoping I would know. I would already have gotten notice, yes or no, on that by the time we talked, but I'm literally waiting. Any day I will get word whether they are offering me a contract or not. I self-published, but what I did was I worked with a publisher of some books that I had seen over the years by a little press, a boutique press on Martha's Vineyard called Vineyard Stories. And Jan Pogue and her husband had started this little publishing company to do titles about Martha's Vineyard, and a few of them were about boats. And the Gannon and Benjamin Boatyard, for example, a book called Schooner that she had done, was a stunningly beautiful book. And her author came out to represent that book at the Wooden Boat Festival. So I'd met her, known her in a different context when the time came when I knew I was at a point where I couldn't go forward anymore. I needed help. I called her to ask her if she would help me. She was just getting ready to close down her business as a publisher, and she didn't want to distribute or actually do the publishing, but she was willing to do whatever level of consulting I needed. And what I ended up having her do, she coached me. She was my structural editor in the beginning. She was my mentor, coach, therapist, you name it, kind of editor at times to move me along. And then she kept me to the timeline once we got going, and then also helped with the selection of the book designer, copy editor, and printer.
Wow.
And managed those through the process so that it came out to be as beautiful a book as it, as I really, you know, paper is important to me, font is important to me, and I, this story in particular, I thought, this is not just my story and my book, this is Pax's story, and every one of those owners, those 10 families too, and I really wanted it to be a high quality book.
I love your commitment to that, and I love your story about your collaboration with your editor, because that's just the kind of relationship I think a writer needs, and not everyone is lucky enough to find the right editor. So you're letting us in on that is so important. We think of, we read the finished book, and I hope our listeners will be reading your book soon and be able to maybe meet you when you're around, bother you when you're writing. You might need
I would love to meet anyone. And like I've said to so many people, you know, so many writers, you included, Sheila, I mean, have said things or written things that you share online, offer encouragement at different times in the process, and I feel absolutely, like, generously wanting to give that back to people as well.
We think of writing as just such a lonely occupation, and only part of it is lonely. The other part of it is connecting with the tribe and really the give and take of what goes on for a writer. So it very much appreciated that you talked about that whole relationship that you had and your goals and commitments. And so we do have just a few more minutes left together. Is there anything else you would like to tell us?
I think that Port Townsend is a fabulous place to write and to network with writers and artists and musicians. You're a poet and an essayist, and all of these terms that I think so many of us are creative, but we don't have a term because we didn't really focus on that. And what I found in this is that by doing a sort of a hybrid memoir, it's almost like a historical mystery book. I mean, it's something that doesn't fit in a genre. I feel like I don't fit in a genre. And then the more I've found in talking to people is that everybody felt like they didn't fit in a genre. And I love it that in Port Townsend in particular is one of those unique special places on the planet so far that I've found, where it seems like even going just to any coffee shop or restaurant or walking downtown or through the boatyard, I find people who I can exchange ideas with. And so I think that with the opportunities now with self-publishing and also with these hybrid things like what I did, that there's no reason not to try, and that we all have a story to tell.
And, you know, the best creative nonfiction actually does include information. In your case, the history of the owners and the impact of the boat on their lives. I think that in some ways, because of maybe the way we study literature, we think more strictly in terms of genre than maybe the actual publishing world could accommodate. And, of course, you've got the boating niche. You've got the history niche. You've got a lot of different audiences who will be interested in your work. But I think because of the way we're taught, because of the way school has to define genre, we feel restricted. I think you're very accurate about that. If people can't self-identify as a particular kind of creative, they may feel that they're not acceptable. And yet in Port Townsend, so much is acceptable that you're right, we're very lucky to be here.
And I think it's one of those things, you know, now that I travel, I arrived there as a traveler. My traveling soul, my wind-born spirit, I find a lot of people who share that there, and I find them in other places in the world too, but boy, we do have a special intersection there.
Right.
And having it as a port city, of course, as a boater, that it overlaps with boating is just priceless, really.
Right. Did you say your wind-blown soul?
Yeah,
well, that's very poetic. And I think, somehow the wind did blow us all here to the tip. I want to thank you so much, Casey, for the conversation today. It's been really fun to talk with you and to learn about the way you've constructed your life and the freedom that it gives you. So again, thank you so much for being our guest.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
In Conversation is produced by Sheila Bender and edited by Charlie Fleischman.